Praise be Jesus and Mary.
Amen.
Continuing today our series on the Ten Commandments in this month of June, we thought it might be helpful to give a reflection on the origins of same-sex attraction as part of the Sixth Commandment, which regards human sexuality and sexual integrity. We know that homosexual attraction is not itself sinful. One, it's disordered, yes, so it's not according to the ordering of sexuality as God created it, but it's not sinful. And two, we know that homosexual activity is gravely sinful, in spite of efforts in the church by some to cancel these basic truths of sexuality. You know, there are some clerics who openly would like to rewrite what the Catechism says about homosexuality. I'd add myself to that list as well. But the one thing I'd like to rewrite probably isn't the same thing that they have in mind. I'd like to rewrite where it says in paragraph 2357 that, quote, the psychological genesis of homosexuality remains largely unexplained, unquote. I'm not convinced that that's totally accurate. I think it remains largely ignored rather than unexplained. Much of what we'll share today is based on the research of a Dutch psychologist and psychotherapist, Dr. Gerhard van den Aardweg, who wrote a book in the late 90s on homosexuality, published by Ignatius Press, called The Battle for Normality. At the time he wrote the book, Dr. van den Aardweg had under his belt more than 30 years of study and therapy experience with more than 300 clients with same-sex orientation. We'll also borrow from another doctor, Dr. Richard Fitzgibbons' reflections on the origins of same-sex attraction, found in the book The Truth About Homosexuality, also published by Ignatius Press. At the time he wrote his article, Father Dr. Fitzgibbons had 20 years of clinical experience with people who have same-sex attractions. So other resources also that we'll cite today will be noted in the description section of the video, which we'll post online. And some of what we'll share today might sound a bit dry and a bit maybe clinical, but I think that can be very helpful in clearing up some of the misinformation and confusion that we've heard over the past few decades. First question regarding the origins of same-sex attraction. Are homosexuals born that way? Well, the answer is that there's no scientific evidence that homosexuality is genetic. Homosexuals have normal hormones, normal genes, and normal brains as well. The LGBTQ-friendly British Royal College of Psychiatrics declared in 2014 that homosexuality is not an inborn variant of sexuality. Dr. Mark Lowry, former professor of moral theology at the University of Dallas, noted that if homosexuality were genetic, well, one, it would have died out a long time ago, right? Since homosexuals tend to reproduce at a much lower level than the general population. Two, if it were genetic, then all sets of identical twins where one is homosexual, the other would be too. Why? Because they have identical DNA. But the research says that that's not the case. Researcher Dr. Neil Whitehead looked into the question of identical twins, and he concluded that if an identical twin has same-sex attraction, the chances of the co-twin having it are about 11% for men and 14% for women. So it's not genetic. Dr. Paul McHugh, professor of psychiatry at Johns Hopkins University, former psychiatrist in chief for Johns Hopkins Hospital, who studied sexuality for 40 years, said that it's a scientific fact that there is no gay gene. So the idea that homosexuals are born that way has no scientific foundation whatsoever. Actually, it's anti-scientific, but it's one of those myths or lies that has been told enough times that everyone tends to believe it. It reminded me of how when I was growing up and I was told that when you see a rainbow, what's at the end of the rainbow, right? A pot of gold. So you'd always hear that, right? I would hear that, read that in books. I would even see it in cartoons on TV. So I said, well, it must be true, right? At the end of the rainbow, there's a pot of gold. A few times, actually, we were driving through on the highway, and you'd actually, the rainbow would actually finish right in the middle of the highway. So I'd be looking around, where's the pot of gold? I don't see it anywhere. And I don't think it was because we were driving too fast, right? If you tell people something which isn't true over and over again, eventually they may believe it, right? So if homosexuality is not genetic, what is it? Well, there are two strong environmental factors or causes. One is dysfunctional parent-child relationships. The other is actually a young person's feeling of gender inferiority and of not being or not belonging with their same-sex peers. So we'll take a look at each of those separately. First, regarding parent-child relationships, June Hunt, in her booklet on this subject, lists three factors frequently leading to homosexuality in men. One, she says, failure of a boy to identify with his father, whom he perceives as absent or weak, while seeing women as undesirable. Two, failure to bond with his father, whom he views as non-affirming. Three, failure to emotionally attach to a positive, healthy male because of abuse by a significant male. Regarding factors that frequently lead females to lesbianism, she lists three again. One, failure to identify with her mother, whom she perceives as absent or weak. Two, failure to bond with her mother, whom she views as non-nurturing. Three, failure to be drawn to males because of an abusive father or mistreatment from other males. Many men with same-sex attraction had an overprotecting, anxious, worrying, or dominant mother, or one who overly admired and pampered them. And as a side note, they say that the emotional ties of people with same-sex attraction to their parents often remain throughout their life, just as they were in childhood and adolescence. So dependence on the mother, aversion, contempt, fear, or indifference towards the father in the male. And in women, often ambivalent feelings to the mother, less often emotional dependence on the father. Indifference or lack of nurturing by a cold or absent same-sex parent can create a deep hunger for love for someone of the same sex. So as children, they can feel emotionally deprived, and when children feel deprived of love, they emotionally detach from the ones not providing that love. And that detachment can actually rob them of forming a positive self-image and a healthy gender identity. When the need for warmth and approval and physical affection and praise from a father isn't felt, an inner emptiness often develops. In an attempt to overcome that pain, well, some male adolescents and young adults will seek comfort in being held by another male. Also, failure to receive positive feedback from one's father results in serious weaknesses in the masculine image and a lack of self-acceptance. Many of those with homosexual attractions grew up feeling that they could never please their fathers, actually. So there's often, not always, but often, dysfunction and emotional deficits in the child-parent relationship, which can predispose someone to develop a homosexual identification. Parental and educational factors prepare that trajectory. They can predispose a child in that way, but they aren't decisive. Actually, the strongest association isn't found between homosexuality and parent-child relationships, but between homosexuality and peer relationships. As a side note, when some of the LGBTQ groups and people, and sadly even priests and bishops, begin speaking of the church as being discriminatory and non-inclusive, and they aren't made to feel that they belong, you do have to ask the question, you know, is it just the church that hasn't made you feel that you belong? Or do those feelings maybe extend beyond the boundaries of the church? Do they maybe extend back to your childhood, to your family life, to your peers? Right? Is the church always as welcoming as it should be with everyone? No, of course it isn't, right? And as a heterosexual male, as a lay person, I experience that myself, right? So it's not a question of same-sex attraction or not. Plus, we know a lot of people who want to be faithful to Christ and to his teachings, the teachings of the church, just aren't comfortable with these things. They don't know how to address them in a charitable and a truthful way. So it's not fair to really accuse or scapegoat them all the time. We have to be careful, because victims who want to remain victims or who are stuck in a victim mentality will often blame and scapegoat others. Addicts also are very good at that as well. People with a victim mentality look at life through a black lens or through a broken lens. In a certain sense, our culture encourages victim mentalities, so any of us can fall into that if we're not careful. Plus, it takes humility and even courage to be able to look inside of yourself and admit that maybe there's something broken inside of me. Right? Maybe that's really where the problem is. Maybe the problem isn't with everyone else or with the church. Maybe the problem is something inside of me that I still need to deal with. Dr. Vanden Aardvig noted that male homosexuals throughout the world criticize the masculinity of the culture they live in. Why? Because they feel inferior in that respect. They feel excluded from the male world in general. Feeling less masculine or feminine than others is the specific inferiority complex of those who identify as homosexual. In our next reflection, we'll talk more about homosexuality and peer relationships. But let's ask Our Lady in this month dedicated to the Sacred Heart for the grace to bring hope and healing to those who live with same-sex attraction. Praise be Jesus and Mary, now and forever.